We celebrate food and eating once a month in a special segment we call Savor. Our regular partner and segment producer is Will Smith, an Ashland-based food stylist with a deep knowledge of food and its preparation. Will keeps the focus on the seasons of food, on what is fresh and ready to eat now. We are in harvest season, so there's almost too much to talk about. So we'll talk about yak. That's right, yak, Y-A-K, the fuzzy cattle-like animals generally found in Tibet and in Jackson County at Firebird Farms. Sophia Weiss is the chief executive at Firebird Farms and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange while we try to get Will on the phone. Hi, Sophia.
Hi there.
It's good to have you.
Thank you so much.
Talk about your entry into the business. And first of all, I mean, you have some farming experience, can we presume, before you took up yak?
No, I did not.
Really?
I was a marketing director. I always wanted to have a farm, but I sort of stumbled into this.
How?
Craigslist. I was purchasing a piece of bare land outside Ashland, and I needed to preserve some pioneer water rights. So I needed a grazing animal that was hardy and resilient and didn't require a lot of oversight or guardian dogs, easy on fences, and could kind of like fend for themselves in the wild. So just stumbled upon yaks, and they ended up being, I fell in love with them.
And how do they do in our climate? Because they usually live on the Tibetan plateau, so pretty high up there where it's dry and cold, right?
True. They have been domesticated and in North America since the 20s. So they have acclimated to this region. Actually, Southern Oregon is really great for them. They don't do well in the super humid south of the United States, but they are all over the U.S. and Canada.
Well, and talk about their impact on the landscape, because obviously, you know, we've been talking, when we talk about climate change, it often turns to the talk of the impact of agriculture on climate, and beef always comes in there big and heavy because cattle are big and heavy and have some impacts on the landscape. Sorry, ranchers, but so talk about what differences you might find between cattle and yak.
Yeah, so one of the things I was also attracted to about the yak, I have heavy clay soil up here, and it is really hard to raise, large ruminants on it. It gets compacted. And one of the great things about the yak is they're both super efficient in their digestion of their rumen, so they can eat less and build their body weight with less forage. But they can also, they're just lighter on the land. Their hooves are smaller. Cows are about 600 pounds at 600 to 800 at full size. So they're just, I call it perfect petting size. And it's a shorter, smaller animal with horns than a cow, that most cattle. And the bulls do get about up to maybe 1,700 pounds, but, you know, it's just a couple bulls per, the whole herd. So they're really docile and lighter on the land.
So you mentioned that this is your first foray into agriculture. Does it help that you don't have a ranching background? I just wonder how much expertise with other kinds of ranching would help or not with with handling yak.
I don't know. I think they're a really good first-time animal for people as long as they have the proper training. I mean, I didn't have the proper training when I started and made a lot of mistakes, so I try to help people mitigate that in their entrance into raising yaks. I think they are different than cattle. They're way smarter. They're fast and they're very agile. So, techniques for running cattle often don't, it's like herding cats, doesn't always work. So, but they are a bovine. So it's just, I came into it with sort of a naive and, fascinated perspective, and after 7 years, I've learned enough to know what to do and what not to do. And I think, they're great for small farms and hobbyists and large scale meat operations.
Sophia Weiss is our guest in this month's edition of Savor, our food segment, with our partner producer, Will Smith, who we're trying to round up on the phone right now. You can join us on the exchange to discuss growing yak at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We do have a narrative that Will provided, and I want to read some of this because he was talking about his experience with you, Sophia. He said, "It was a beautiful morning with much less smoke than usual. I drove up Dead Indian Memorial Road to a property just east of the Shale City off road. 225 acres of meadow and forest. Sophia greeted me and we began our trek up the mountain about a half mile up. Sophia started calling them, part whistle, part yell." Let's pause there. How do you call the yak?
Oh, I have my own. I've developed a sound that doesn't hurt my vocal cords after I do it 20 times. So it's sort of like a yodel whistle sort of thing. Everyone has their own style with them.
Mm-hmm. And Will goes on to say in his narrative, "In about 15 minutes, we were surrounded by 36 yak, bulls, cows, and calves. It was a very magical experience. She has named all of them, and many are bottle fed by her. They know her. She knows them. They are massive and a bit intimidating, but all were gentle and curious about me. A true dream come true."
Yeah. I have a meat business, and how I run my farm is the ones that don't present the characteristics of, you know, a docile, enjoyable animal to raise, they go into the meat program. So everyone here is lovely.
Interesting. So the ones who are docile and easy to get along with, obviously there are other things you can get from yak. So let's talk about what you can get from yak besides meat.
Yeah. So what I started with is a high-end breeding program. I procured animals from all around over five states, and specific genetics, and they have all different phenotypes within the yak world. So there are ones with more fiber production, more exterior guard hair, and also more down production. So I was going for having a significant number in the herd that produce really beautiful down fiber, which is kind of like cashmere.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have lanolin like sheep wool, but it is really thermally insulating, really soft, absolutely luxurious. So that was my other primary focus, apart from having really robust, large-framed animals for meat production. You can go packing with them. You can ride them. You know, it's really however much you put into it is what you get out. With the right animal, you can walk them around Ashland if you wanted to.
Have you tried that?
No, I have not.
Uh-huh. All right, so let me break down some of the terms you're talking about, because you mentioned guard hair. What is that?
So they have, it's a multi-layered coat that sheds annually. So the guard hair is the hair that you see on the exterior of the animal. And in Asia, they use that for making ropes and their traditional nomadic tents and outerwear. Really strong, really durable.
Okay, so that's the tough stuff. And then you mentioned a kind of a downy fiber, too.
Then underneath is this amazing down. In the wintertime when my hands are cold, I just put my hand inside their fur, and it's where they've grown their winter down coat. And they shed it in the spring, but it is absolutely phenomenally warm. Really nice.
So what is the spring shed like? I have this vision of, like, you know, sheets of yak hair hanging on the bushes and stuff.
It does that if I don't brush it fast enough. There is a window here in Southern Oregon. If we get a really wet spring, I know people up in Washington and, you know, the temperate areas have issue with this in the spring. You really have to brush. It takes a few sessions to brush it out as they continue to shed. But, and it comes out in these giant sloughs of, you just get trash cans full of this beautiful fiber with a herd this size. And, you know, home spinners can use it off of a little herd. They can just, I've known people to drop spindle it. And if you don't brush it, it dreads and felts to their body and eventually comes off in giant sheets. Yes.
Will Smith is finally with us. Will, good to have you at last.
Hi, it's a strange phone issues.
Okay, but all fixed up now. So we've been catching up on the things that go on with the yaks, and I already read some of your narrative about your visit to the farm, and
sure.
and Sophia told us about her combination yodel whistle to bring people in.
Amazing.
But this magical moment for you, it sounds like.
No, it was so beautiful. It's such an incredible, beautiful piece of property, and we went up, and I didn't see any yaks, And Sophia did her call, and you know, it was probably about 15 minutes, and we were then surrounded by about 3 dozen gigantic animals, and that was like a childhood dream come true for me.
And so, first of all, let me come back a little further then, to beyond just yak, but Will, you and Harvest, and what's, I mean, September must like be a mind blower for you when everything's coming ripe at the same time.
Oh, it is. If we have listeners that really haven't frequented a farmer's market, you know, September's probably the best month. You're seeing sort of the end of some beautiful fruit, and then just this huge, you know, Thanksgiving sort of harvest for the fall. So all your squashes and grapes and apples and pears, and it's quite beautiful.
I want to remind our listeners, you can join our Savor Food segment here on The Exchange with Will Smith and Sophia Weiss from Firebird Farms, 800-838-3760. For your questions and comments, you do get screened. You don't go straight to the air, so don't worry about that. 800-838-3760, or put your thoughts in an email to jx@jeffnet.org. Sophia, talk about, since these are, you know, high desert kinds of animals, how they coped this particular summer with the heat and smoke.
Yeah, this was a big topic in the yak community because it's been really brutal all around the western part of the country and in the eastern part as well. They did really well. I went down and found the whole herd during, we usually don't get over 100 degrees up at this elevation very often in the summer, and we had that few day stretch of over 100 degrees. The entire herd was lined up in the creek with their feet in the water. So they're just all the way down the creek. So they were cooling themselves that way. And they acted completely normal, and I was the one suffering.
So, and what about any kind of special permits or agricultural clearance or import, anything of that stuff? Is there anything more complicated about just obtaining yak other than, you know, different from, say, cattle?
Not within the continental United States. They are considered an exotic livestock, similar to bison and alpaca. So in terms of the laws, every state has their own importation guidelines necessary for bringing them into the state, like specific vet work procedures. But other than that, no, it's actually quite easy to acquire yak. You know, one would just hope that it's a good yak.
Right. It's interesting, though, the relationship you describe with the yak. I mean, you have to navigate a zone between caring for the animals and not caring too much for any of them as individuals, particularly the ones that go into the meat program. But it sounds like you, well, to get it bluntly put, you put the grumpy ones into the meat program.
Yes. And I mean, the reality is that there are a lot of males that are born that are not fit to become that 1 out of 100 excellent meat breeding bull. And those are either, if they're not super tame, they go into the meat program. I'm sure they could be tamed, but, you know, I run a business and there's one of me, so they go into the meat program. But there are docile animals that do go in there, but it's because I believe they shouldn't all go into the breeding pool.
Will, talk about your research into the nutritional value of yak. There are some really interesting attributes to the meat.
I know it is. It's quite amazing. It's about half the amount of fat of you know, store-bought beef, and it is so lean, about 96 to 97% lean. So it's similar to a like skinless chicken breast, maybe even a bit less. Because they are raised and from that really high altitude, you know, they have a much different way of processing oxygen so that meat is uber lean and has a much deeper redder color. Therefore, it's higher in iron and niacin and B vitamins. And it takes a little bit more finesse in cooking it, but it's a delicious alternative.
Yeah, I noticed that the word finesse, and it's on the recipe for a yak filet sauté that is already up on our website. And so when you talk about finesse, what does that mean?
I think you just need to be attentive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something you're going to throw on the grill and go have a beer or, or be involved in your side dishes. It really needs you to be, you know, attentive to what you're doing. And that's really what I mean by that.
Mm-hmm. And so so what did you do? So it looks like you got a fillet that you cut into six medallions here.
Well, it was great. She Sophia gave me not only some ground, which we did burgers with on the grill. Again, be attentive. Don't walk away from the grill. So both sautéing and grilling, you know, I think the idea is maybe a little, let that charcoal really burn down a bit. Take your time. It's a little bit a lower heat, whether you're on a saute pan or whether you're on the grill. I think a lower heat is a little bit better, just so you don't have the possibility of overcooking it. You really want, because there's no fat, there's not a lot of fillers, you know, what you're dealing with is pure protein. And so you just don't want to overdo it. So with the saute pan, I like medium high heat, do a nice brown sear on both sides. Then I like to take it out of the pan because the pan is retaining a lot of heat and put those medallions onto a baking sheet and then finish it in the oven. And even in the oven, I might flip it one more time. You just want to get that really even, slow heat through the center, which is going to keep all that moisture on the inside.
And I noticed that go ahead.
With the burgers and the medallions, you also then want to let it rest a bit on the counter, out of the heat, and you're going to end up with this beautiful medium rare. And there's a photo there on the website. It's just incredibly beautiful color, very juicy, and it was a highlight of my summer.
Well, the resting part, though, this is interesting because I noticed this is what seems like a longer resting period for a cut of meat, 10 to 15 minutes, even for the medallions. That's kind of a long.
Yeah, no, and you don't have to do that, but I really find that you're allowing all of that moisture in the meat to really get out to the edges that you seared. And the medallions that I cooked, it was that beautiful pink from the very edge all through the center, very solid. It was really beautiful.
You're making my mouth water, but, you know, that's happened before on this segment. Sophia, we have an email from Joy and Talent who asks a question I have failed to ask yet, which is about milking yaks. Can you make yogurt? Because she's interested in that.
Yes, that is the other, one of the other attributes of this multi-purpose species. So they produce an extremely rich milk that is almost like a concentrated milk compared to domestic cattle. So they really don't produce a lot of it, which is why you're not seeing domestic U.S.-produced yak milk on the market as of yet, because it is, their teeth are very small, like a little goat. And they're really, it's a challenge to milk them. They don't produce a lot of it, but what they do produce is exceptional. And so if you did have a small herd and sort of, you know, worked with that individual from the beginning, yes, you can absolutely train them and milk them and create the most incredible cheeses and yogurts and everything.
Okay, but you're starting with a pretty small reservoir of stuff to begin with because they're just not that much. Yeah.
Yeah, what they do in Asia below 14,000 feet is they combine an Asiatic cattle with a yak, and it increases, they're called doe, it increases the milk production, but it retains that really rich quality, higher fat and minerals. So I'm going to experiment with that. There are some people in the U.S. doing that. It's not for a breeding program. It's a terminal breeding. It's just to have that dairy production.
Okay, so you don't create other zoos from zoos.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's what I thought terminal meant. Will, do you want to tell the story of your discovery in boxes of books involving yak when you moved recently?
I was so excited when I got to talk to Sophia. I actually took it up with me to share with her. So, you know, I was a member of the Weekly Reader group in the late 60s. And one of my most favorite books was Alexander and the Magic Mouse. It was written by Martha Sanders. And the best part of the book are these illustrations by Philippe Six. And it's just a great sort of Victorian grandmother who has this you know, a menagerie of animals living with her. An alligator, a mouse, a cat, and this lady yak. So I was always very, it was one of my favorite books, and the illustrations were neat. And the illustration was an exact replica of Sophia's herd, so I was not disappointed.
Excellent. Okay.
Adorable.
Yeah.
And had you seen that book before yourself, Sophia?
I had not. No, mm-hmm. I was thrilled. I loved illustration.
So, so talk about the growth of the business. I mean, how the herd is, what is it, 180 at this point?
Yeah, it's very large. I'm distributing yaks for sale this fall to a number of states because I bought a very large herd recently and have been taming them down. They were wild, running wild on thousands of acres. So, yeah, in my core breeding program, I have about 25 babies a year, little adorable fluff balls that are all pedigreed and just delightful. But yeah, it started with, two yaks. So
wow.
I had a male and a female, and it just sort of, snowballed from there to the point where I figured out, you know, how many I needed to produce enough to reliably have for meat and not have to butcher animals. I only do it out of the ones that, you know, I feel like are, you know, deserve to go into the meat program, if it can be said. Mm-hmm. But all of the core herd and the tame ones and the females, you know, that are gorgeous, they all go on to be breeding stock.
Okay.
So,
Firebird Farms online and linked from our website at jeffexchange.org. Sophia Weiss, the chief executive. Sophia, thanks so much for visiting with us today.
Thank you so much.
Savor, our food segment produced by Will Smith. Will, as always, thank you.
Thank you.